Hello, Gwen and Kate here from Right Up My Podcast. Before we get started on this episode, we just wanted to talk to you about our Patreon.
This is where we put all our episode extras for free, and for the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can join the very exclusive Rump Club.
Yes, as a member, you will get access to extra Wiffle Waffle from Kate and I, behind the scenes content, music and lyrics from our incredible jingles, and we're even going to put some bonus episodes up there too.
The funds from Patreon go towards covering our running costs, as well as earning our unending love and gratitude.
So if you'd like to become one of our supporters and join the Rump Club, head on over to patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. Thank you.
It's right up my street, it's my boulevard, it's right up my Straza. Oh my God, it's garden right up there. Ah, it's right up my podcast.
Welcome to Write Up My Podcast.
My name's Gwen Watson.
And my name's Kate White.
And this is the podcast in which we talk to people about the thing that is right up their Straza that makes them feel good.
And what have you been doing this week, Gwen, to make you feel good?
Very good question, Kate. I'm glad you've asked. Do you know what I've been doing? I watched a really awesome documentary, My Octopus Teacher, on Netflix. But we're going to be talking about that a bit more in the interview, so I'll leave that there. But yes, that's the thing that has made me feel good. Anyway, what about you, Kate? What has made you feel good?
I did have a little think about this when I went on my walk earlier. I've been trying to get enough sleep, because if I don't get enough sleep, I've realised that I just struggle with everything in life, basically. I feel a little bit sad. I feel a little bit grumpy. I stop eating properly. I generally make mountains out of molehills, left, right and centre. If I'm getting enough sleep, I can handle it all.
So what does that mean? Have you just been going to bed earlier?
Trying to go to bed a bit earlier, yeah.
What time do you go to bed?
Oh, I'm going to sound like a right grandma now, but actually if I...
Half past six,
we'd have had my tea. No, if I can be going to bed about 10 o'clock... then a happy Kate.
Yes.
Is.
And so what does that mean? You physically get into bed at 10 o'clock. When are you turning off your light?
I love to read before I go to sleep. So if I'm physically in bed at 10 o'clock, I'll then read, turn off my light about 10:30.
You've inspired me because I'm the same. I'm awful if I don't get enough sleep. And I've got into a really, really, really bad habit of just having my mobile phone with me in my room. And so I'm on it at night. And I know if I have screens off by 10 and then I just spend that last hour reading, then yeah, same as you. I'm happy Gwen. Go to bed, turn the light off, switch the light off, go off to a lovely sleep. But instead, if I sit there zinging my brain up until like 5 to 11 and then try to read something, well, then I read on past 11 and it's gone into the witching hour, and it's just not good.
I know, it doesn't work. And the phones are a killer. The number of times I've woken up at 4 in the morning and be like, oh, I'm feeling a bit awake now. I might just see if there's any messages that pinged in while I've been sleeping.
No.
So I've actually put my charger downstairs now, and I plug my phone in downstairs and I leave it down there when I go up to bed.
Right.
And I have had moments where I'm lying in bed twitchy, like my fingers are physically twitching to go and get it.
Bad. Well, you know that documentary that's just ruined everybody? The Social Dilemma.
I've not watched it yet.
Oh my God, Kate. I mean, we've all seen The Great Hack. We know about Cambridge Analytica. Yeah. We know that these things are already evil, but... Basically, it's about all the people who created the app. So Google, Insta, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And just like the things that they have built into the apps to make us constantly engage with them. So, and they're kind of saying it's like, you know, the pokey machines, like the, you know, what are they called? The gambling machines. What do you call them?
Oh,
in the UK?
The slot machines.
Slot machines.
Slot machines?
Yeah.
You can't see, but I'm doing that.
We're both doing the one-armed bandit motion. Basically, they're built like those. So there's constant kind of... there's constant little notifications and things to constantly engage us. So what it has developed, obviously, is an addiction. We are addicted to these apps. And it's like, it's stuff that we know, right? But we are actually, it's a fact. We are addicted to them.
And that's a sign of proper addiction, isn't it? That we know that they're designed to have this response from us, yet we still do it.
Yeah, right. But you know what? I'm going to do it today. I'm going to do it from tonight, because I used to be really disciplined, have it in the kitchen, have the phone charging in the kitchen. Yeah. So my bedroom was a phone-free zone, and I'm going to go back to doing that. You've inspired me, Kate.
Oh my God, I don't think I've ever inspired anyone before in my life. This is a big moment for me.
And we're only a few minutes in.
This can already get better.
Hey, it's episode 3.
Hey, episode 3. My God.
Exciting. It's so lovely, isn't it? And before we get into the episode, I just want to say we've had such lovely feedback from episodes 1 and 2.
Yes, it's really meant a lot, hasn't it? Getting that feedback from people.
That it's really resonating with people, and that's putting a big smile on my face.
It really has. One funny piece of feedback from a friend of mine who listened to the Klarna one, she said she really, really enjoyed it, but she's got 2 young kids, and she said that actually she would pay someone not to touch her for 30 minutes as opposed to the opposite with Klarna, which made me chuckle. Fair enough. Potato, potato.
Yeah, totally get it. My absolute favourite feedback, let me see, I've got it here, Nikki T. She said, basically it's a podcast version of the Goop Lab, which is exactly what I wanted.
Oh my God, Nikki, if you're listening to this episode, you will not believe the unparalleled joy that brought both Gwen and I.
It's not that we want to be Gwyneth, but we do love the Goop Lab, so that's pretty much
love
the best
Goop.
Best feedback we could possibly have. Although we did have a little bit of the ASMR episode 2 has had a little bit of varying feedback, hasn't it? Especially the first kind of 2-3 minutes.
So our friend Pickle Lady has proved to be a bit divisive, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Some people have just not been able to get past that.
It turns out a lot of people have misophonia, and a lot of people, when they hear somebody eating, and in her case, she's chomping down on pickles, they actually want to thump the wall.
Yeah, violence has been close to the surface. But for anyone who's not listened to it yet, do not be put off, because Pickle Lady, what would you say? She lasts for like a minute max?
A minute, maybe 2. I mean, maybe we should have had less of Pickle Lady, but do persevere, because it becomes, there's much, much nicer examples of ASMR after that.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, when I first heard her, I was so, well, you'll know this from listening to the episode, that I was just like, what is going on? What am I watching? This is just so bizarre. And now, When I listened back to the episode, I was getting scalp tingles from listening to Pickle Lady's chomping. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
How interesting.
If you didn't like it, listen again.
One thing that a few people have said to us after listening to ASMR is they want to hear Gwen and I do our own ASMR recording.
Oh, yes.
So this is something that we think we might do, and we might put on our Patreon page.
Oh my God, what an amazing segue.
I know, that was so smooth.
What's the Patreon page, Kate?
Well, Gwen, funny you should ask. The Patreon page, if you go to patreon.com/writeupmypodcast, it is a place where we ask people if they would like, or where there's the opportunity for people who would like to make a donation, either a one-off donation, a regular donation of any amount. And
it's like a subscription fee, isn't it?
A subscription fee, exactly. And the reason why we set this up is because we've got quite a big team of really amazingly generous people who have helped us put this podcast together, from artwork to editing to music. And we'd love it if we could throw a few pennies their way.
Yeah.
In exchange, we are going to try and load up the Patreon page as a thank you with all sorts of behind the scenes footage, ASMR recordings, apparently, and any other juicy extra content that we can think of.
Excellent. Like, you don't have to pay much, do you? You can pay like £1 a month.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the idea is like if everybody did that, we could actually afford to eat. Or rather, our editor could finally afford to eat the things we put him through.
Whose birthday is today? So happy birthday, Andy.
Happy birthday, Andy Turvey. You are amazing. Did you know, by the way, sorry, we will get on with the episode now, but Andy Turvey, he is in Paw Patrol. Did you know that? Is he the captain of the boat?
Yes, I think he is. I've told a lot of people about this, and they've all been way more excited about Andy being on Paw Patrol than they have been about our podcast sometimes.
Big up, Andy. All right, let's get on with it, shall we?
It's right up my podcast.
So what is this next episode about?
This episode is Shirin Yoku, which translates as forest shower or forest bathing. Now, to me, that sounds like getting naked in the forest. But apparently that's not what it is.
We can but hope. Someone who's going to tell us a little bit more about it is a very interesting man called Stefan Batoris. So Shinrin-yoku is all about the physical and the psychological benefits of completely immersing yourself in a forest environment. Mm. Stefan has set up an organisation called Nature and Therapy UK, where he runs Shinrin-yoku courses. But he's also a psychotherapist, and he runs, he works with groups in the natural environment. He's run programmes with the NHS, and he also lectures at Plymouth University, where he teaches about the benefits of immersion in nature and how this could be used in work with people with mental health challenges, recovery from trauma. So he's hugely knowledgeable about this area.
And before we dive into our chat with Stefan, just want to give a quick heads up that for some reason, Kate sounds like she recorded her end of the interview in a cardboard box. Just want to assure listeners that she was not in a cardboard box. She is well and safe. And to apologise for the slight dip in sound quality. Sorry about that. Anyway, first we asked him, what is Shinrin-yoku?
Shinrin-yoku is a Japanese term. And it translates into English as forest shower or forest bath. But what it implies is actually a total immersion experience in the forest environment, as if we were having a shower of the forest. And it's really important to remember that, because it's this immersion experience that we have in the forest that has the most healing kind of potency to it.
And where did this come from? So obviously it's Japanese. But they invented this for a reason, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, Shinrin-yoku sounds like it's been around since the dawn of time. But actually, it was a term that was first coined in the early 1980s by the head of forestry in Japan, in Tokyo. I think what happened is the government realised that after their post-war expansion, they had some serious health issues within the population due to migration from the countryside into the city, overcrowding in their environments that they were living in, and also overcrowding in their factory and office environments were leading to a lot of serious health issues. Mm. And so they turned to the Ministry of Forestry and said, what can you do? And so they started taking people out on walks in the sacred forests on the outskirts of Tokyo. And that's kind of where it all kicked off, really, in about 1983.
Right. So how does that translate then into the work that you're doing? You're based in Dartmoor and you spend a lot of time with clients working in the world of Shinrin-yoku. How does that translate then into that?
Well, for about the last 20 or 30 years, I've been working with people therapeutically outdoors, and I set up a project with the NHS, but the inference was always, or the questions that were always asked were, well, Stefan, that's great, but where's your evidence base, you know, in terms of your science? And when I came across Shinrin-yoku, it was really, that was the last piece of the jigsaw for me. It was the missing bits of science and research in the language that the medical profession would understand that vindicated all of my beliefs about the benefits of nature for healing and well-being. And particularly for people with mental health issues, I feel that being in nature is a really good place for people to heal.
So tell us then about this science research.
Yes, so it started quite slowly in Japan. What they did was they took people out just for walks in the forest, and then just anecdotally, people said they began to feel less stressed and a lot happier and healthier. So then they got more funding to continue the research, and they do control studies. So they do a group walking in a shopping mall and a group walking in a forest, quite basic. And then they compare the results. And then at lunchtime, the groups would swap over and they do a comparison there. They made sure that the people walked the same distance in the forest as they would normally walk during their everyday life to rule out the benefits of exercise.
Oh, okay.
And then gradually the experiments became slightly more sophisticated, in that they started taking blood and saliva samples before and after the walks. So these walks were typically between 3 hours and sometimes up to a week in duration within the research.
I'm sorry, what? Up to a week?
Yes, yeah, so they would walk each day and then stay in a lovely hotel in the forest.
Right.
Lucky them.
Yeah, with spas and everything.
Oh, delightful. And were they repeating this in the shopping mall as well?
No, this was just...
Okay, we're on to a different part of the experiment now.
Yes. So when they started measuring the blood and saliva, they were still doing these comparisons with shopping malls or with a park in the city. But what they were interested in looking at was physiological changes. So what they discovered was quite remarkable. The main finding of their research in measuring blood was that there was a large increase in the activity of the immune system.
Right.
And so what they were measuring were what are called NK cells or natural killer cells.
Okay.
So these are cells that our body creates continuously, and they go around our bodies 24 hours a day looking for and sort of scavenging any diseased or damaged cells within us. So that's happening all the time,
right,
in every human being. Because we're continually getting damaged cells within us or tumorous cells, and our bodies just go in and mop them up.
Right.
For example, when we get a flu or something like that, and then just after we've got the flu, we get that really achy, swollen feeling and the fever. That's those NK cells doing their job, actually.
Right.
And then once they've destroyed the virus, those cells then are eliminated through the lymph system.
Right.
So in order for the system to work to its optimum, the NK cells, which come in three different types, the first one, its job is to identify any damaged or diseased cells, and it puts a label on it. The second one comes along and actually makes a hole in that cell. And then the third one comes along and injects itself through the hole into the middle of the damaged cell and digests it from within. And then that dying toxic cell is then eliminated through our lymph system.
Wow, that's amazing.
Blimey.
Our bodies are incredible.
The body's amazing. It's incredible what it can do. But for it to work efficiently, all three of those need to be elevated exactly the same. And that's what they found from as little as a day's exposure to the forest, those NK cell counts were elevated for anything up to a month afterwards.
A month? Wow. Just from a day in the forest, blimey.
And so what is that down to then? Is that down to just being out in the fresh air and away from their desks? Or is that something that specifically the forest is providing?
Good question.
Thank you.
Top of the class.
So one of the factors, just to kind of put a caveat on this, what they started doing later on was to try and isolate what's actually going on here. So they sat people in seedy Tokyo hotel rooms and got them to watch television images of forests to see what effect that had. And then in another experiment, same hotel rooms, but this time breathing in the essential oils that came from these Japanese trees.
Right.
Mm.
The conclusion they came to, this is from the chief medical officer researcher. His conclusion was, we can only replicate 50% of the benefits of the forest. He said the other 50% is the mystery of the forest.
Wow.
Wowzers. Okay.
Which is lovely, actually.
That is.
Yeah,
but going back to Gwen's question, one of the things they discovered which was critical to this, is something called phytoncides.
Phytoncides.
Okay. So the word phytoncide actually means exterminated by the plant.
Right.
Now, all plants give off phytoncides as a kind of protective mechanism to defend themselves from attack by being eaten or by being attacked by fungi and rotting. Mm. So these oils, they're basically volatile organic oils, are diffused into the atmosphere to protect the tree. And I just think it's just an incredibly amazing thing that the oils, the chemicals that are produced by the tree to protect the tree, when we breathe them in, they protect us.
That is amazing. I just think
that is quite phenomenal.
That's incredible. Yes.
Yeah.
And that so many of us... No, it's okay. I was going to say that so many of us don't realise that this is going on when we're in the woods on a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when we go into the woods and we breathe in the air of the woods, we're breathing in these phytoncides and they're actually going through our bodies and causing physiological changes because they are they're very subtle chemicals that are in an aerosol form. And when you look at the qualities of the essential oils, such as used in massage, that come from trees, they are antibacterial, antiviral. There's a whole list of qualities that these oils have. And you just look at that and you go, wow, that's amazing that they have all these incredible qualities that support human function.
Are we getting the same impact from sniffing on an essential oil to being out there and sniffing in the right real life tree essence?
Tree sniffing, it's a new therapy.
Thank you, tree sniffing, yeah. That's what I wanted.
Yes, tree sniffing, yes. Well, you'd think so, but apparently not. According to the main researcher, Dr. King Lee, he can only reproduce 50% of that effect.
Right.
So there's something about maybe the combination of oils from the different trees.
Right.
And I think also holistically, being in the forest is having, you know, a beneficial effect at so many different levels that the oils, the breathing in the oils and having the physical effect of being in the forest is actually helping it to work a much more efficiently.
Right.
So yeah, just going back to the qualities of these essential oils, and this is something that I just find like a miracle to me. I just want to read out the qualities of just one of these oils. And this is one called Palo Santo. Analgesic, anti-allergenic, anti-anxiety, anti-asthmatic, antibacterial, antidepressant, anti-infectious, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, antispasmodic, calming, cephalic, CNS tonic, decongestant, expectorant, immunostimulant, and tonic.
Wow.
That's just one of those.
Yeah.
Now, out of that list, you can understand the ones, a lot of them obviously insect repellents as well, which you'd understand they would naturally be. But what I find interesting is that most of them say they're anti-anxiety and antidepressant.
Right.
It's like, how can that be? How can that work? What happens is that when you breathe them in, when these oils go into the brain, they have a very slightly sort of narcotic effect on the brain, and they actually help to reprogram the brain as we're breathing them in. So they calm and sedate the brain and allow the brain to reset itself,
right,
which is quite extraordinary.
This is fascinating. Where did this come about? So this is the impact on trees and their phytoncides, is that what you're calling it? On
yes,
their essential oils on humans.
Yes.
Like, where did this come from on the evolutionary kind of development process? What, like, if presumably...
That's another amazing question, yeah.
So it really shows the link between animals and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And, You got it.
And how it's all living symbiotically. How has that evolved?
I'm just going to answer your question in a kind of reverse order here. So the research coming out of Japan has focused on the health benefits of forests. And they've looked specifically at the main sort of diseases of an industrialized Western society. So they've looked at obesity, they've looked at heart disease, they've looked at metabolic disorders, they've looked at insomnia, and they've looked at anxiety and depression, for example. The thing is, what they're saying is, and what they're prescribing is, you know, trips to the forest will help you improve your health. But I want to just reverse that and turn that around and say, actually, a lack of being in the forest is what caused these problems in the first place.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that we evolved in a forest environment.
Right.
And in fact, I want to go even further than that and say that the forest evolved us. The forest made us who we are. So the forest actually created our physiology and psychology. The forest actually forced us to become bipeds.
Interesting.
Oh, so we could navigate our way through trees?
So we could start climbing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and right, climbing, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're designed to climb trees. That's our body shape.
Right. How interesting.
And so we've got so far removed from the forest that is leading to all these physiological and health issues.
Yes, because we were so symbiotically and intimately entwined with the forest that our physiology and psychology developed in association with the forest environment. And once we started to remove ourselves from that, we weren't getting those benefits that were supporting our health from breathing in the forest environment and eating the forest foods.
Yeah, and I guess big swathes of the planet were covered in forest.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I feel a bit teary. I feel that we've just done such a bad job, haven't we? And we've just distanced ourselves so far from nature, and it's where we come from.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. And just to get it into proportion. Boom. The amount of time that we've spent developing the forest environment.
You blow
is the
me
entire
away.
Length of a Premier League football pitch. The amount of time we've spent
is like
in
a mic
urban
drop party. Yes, you
is the last
on the
10
mic.
Millimeters of the touchline.
I'm digging those things that you say. So very good. Yes, it's good. It's big good anyway. It's like a mic drop party.
I watched this week that doco on Netflix called My Octopus Teacher, and I've been just banging on about it to everybody I meet that they should should also watch it, because he talks about exactly that. And he talks about for those of you who haven't seen it yet, you've got to watch it. It's so good. And this guy goes down into the same spot of the ocean. He's in South Africa, and he goes down to the same spot, and he bonds with an octopus, and he goes down for nearly a whole year, doesn't he? He's going down every day.
It is a whole year. Yeah.
Yeah. And he talks about his kind of summation is that we are part of nature. We are not a visitor. And
that's right.
That really resonated. And it's like he really understood, like spending that time in there, he really saw the symbiotic relationship between all the plants, between the crustaceans, between the sharks, the fish, the octopus. And it's like that's what we've disconnected from, isn't it? Historically, we would have been totally connected to nature, like native populations are, and Aboriginal populations were or are, that they are totally connected with nature, reliant on nature, and respectful of nature. And we have put a barrier between us and it, and somehow decided that we're superior to other animals, and it's to our own detriment, isn't it?
Yes, I was really moved by that documentary, because it wasn't just reporting about nature. It was actually him talking about his own personal and intimate experience within nature. Mm. It was so refreshing and so different.
And it's such an interesting point, because we do increasingly see ourselves as other, don't we, to nature? We look in from the outside. We're looking at it as an observer, as opposed to something that's integral and part of it, to the detriment of everything, ourselves included.
Yes, and I think that's, in a way, that's how my training and my teaching differs from the work from Japan, which is in many ways brilliant, but quite formalized. And I think in our culture here, we have a very different way of being. And so I encourage my students to think like an animal. So rather than being on the footpath, looking into nature, I encourage them to get in underneath the bushes, to get into the undergrowth and be an animal looking out from nature, looking out that way. Mm. And it makes that perspective, that shift, makes a huge difference.
So can we talk for a minute about how our listener based in the UK, not having access to these wonderful ancient pine forests in Japan, how can someone listening to this show tap into some of the things you're talking about and tap into forest bathing and the benefits of some of the wonderful essential oils that we've been talking about?
This work can be done even at a very small scale, even by finding some fir cones and bringing them into your house and touching them, looking at the design of the fir cone. You can also go on kind of mini adventures. So just setting off from your home, find out where are the green spaces around where I live. And, you know, parks and gardens are good, but what I really like are the scruffy bits of wasteland, because they hold the most potency. They hold the power of nature more than the more manicured areas of gardens and lawns. Right. So if you can go and seek out those kind of rough bits of disused ground that nobody's using, and just wander through there. And I encourage people to just wander in a dream, wander aimlessly with no particular purpose or direction. Just wander around slowly and just looking at things. It has an incredibly healing effect on the whole system. And when you are with plants, you're going to be breathing in those phytoncides. Every plant produces them. It's what we get in our healing and culinary herbs, are those oils, those particular aromas. That's the phytoncides.
Right. You mentioned bay leaves to me when we spoke the other day.
So yes, I was saying all our healing and culinary herbs have strong concentrations of these phytoncides within them to protect themselves. And that's part of what forms the particular qualities of these plants that we use and that we call them herbs. And the bay leaf that we use comes from the plant Laurus nobilis. If you crush a bay leaf and smell it, those oils that you get from it, that smell, that wonderful scent that we put in our cooking, those are the phytoncides. That's the healing properties of that tree.
Amazing.
Do you know what I always do? I've got a really instinctive habit of when I walk past a rosemary bush, and if you're walking through cities, especially Bristol, they're growing out of everybody's front walls.
Yes.
I've always got an urge to just grab one and squeeze one and then smell it as I walk
crush
along.
It. Yeah,
yes.
Smell it. Yes, yes.
And my old landlord said to me, because he had this massive bush and we'd both do it, and he said it's supposed to, I remember him telling me it's good for you. Yeah. And I was like, really? Because it's a real instinctive thing to do.
Yeah.
Yes, that. Yeah, and lavender as well.
Yes, and lavender, yes. And so is it good for us? Are we kind of tapping into some instinctive urge that we've lost by wanting to crush plants and sniff in the aroma?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Over millions of years, we would have evolved to know intuitively where these healing plants were.
Right.
And so that knowledge and wisdom about which plants to use became more and more sophisticated, until eventually that knowledge was held by the women of the tribe. You know, they had what was called wort cunning. The word wort, any plant that's got wort at the end of it, like pennywort, mugwort, wort means a healing herb.
Oh. I did not know that.
Wort cunning.
So
I love
people
that.
Who knew about
new tattoo.
Yeah, people who knew about it had wort cunning. but of course that got, you know, misinterpreted by the church as them being witches. And we know what happened after that.
Yes, let's not go there. So if Kate and I want to go out, because we try everything. We try everything out. We interview somebody, then we go and try it ourselves to see if it works for us. What should we do as we're walking through the woods and say that what the Japanese would do as they were walking through the woods. Do we get quite active in smelling and sniffing and looking and touching? Or is it enough to just walk?
Yes, so make sure you haven't got any distractions. So it's best to have your mobile phone switched off, right, so you're not going to get any distractions. And if possible, it's good to kind of go alone. Otherwise, you end up just in sort of conversation with people and you can miss out so much. And to just, as I was saying before, just to go and ramble, just go and wander around the woodland aimlessly, not knowing where you are, getting lost, finding your way around, in a dream. And if you come across something that you're inquisitive about, then have a little scratch and sniff, or sit down next to a tree, or if a particular area seems to be calling to you, go and explore that area, go and sit down there. And just, you know, talking to my students yesterday, they were saying one of the most beneficial exercises that I've shared with them that they offer their clients is to just go and lie down on the ground.
Right.
Literally, that's it.
And look up into the canopy.
Yeah, look up into the canopy, but just get your whole body on the ground.
Yeah.
And just sink in as if you're sinking into a soft duvet.
Ooh. Oh, that sounds lovely.
Oh,
yeah. And just let go.
Oh, bring it on. Wait for a nicer dry day, I reckon, for that one.
Yes.
I was chatting to a gardener the other day who was saying that wherever possible, she likes to paint the ceilings of her rooms green because she feels there's something really calming to look up into a green colour, mimicking in her eyes the green canopy of the woods.
Yeah, yeah. I think there are so many ways that we can begin to integrate nature into our lives in a lot more kind of detail, so that we're living more, beginning to take steps to live more harmoniously with nature.
Yes.
You know, just acknowledging the seasons.
Acknowledging seasons.
Yeah, just acknowledging seasons and the way that things are turning.
Yeah.
You know, by going back to visit the same place on a regular basis, we begin to form what I call a kind of spiritual bank account in that particular place in nature. We're investing our own personal energy there, and we're mingling with the energy of that part of the woods.
How interesting.
And we form this relationship, this intimacy.
Do you know what? I did that in lockdown.
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Yeah, because like it's really important for us right now, isn't it? And what with everything that's going on in the world. And during lockdown, I had what I call my lockdown shutdown, and where I just couldn't really function and do normal things or much in a day. And so, but what I did religiously every day was go out walking, and I would walk along. I was walking along moorland, but I would head for the trees along the edge. And I've lived here for years previously, and I for the first time it felt I was really paying attention to, because it was spring, the buds unfurling, the leaves unfurling, and I really felt that this was the first time I'd ever really seen that happening, even though I've walked past these trees loads of times. And it was exactly that, it was that seeing it on a daily basis, you really paid attention and I saw spring happening and saw it evolve around me and erupt around me. And yeah, that's a special thing, isn't it?
It's very special, yeah.
And do you think that's a way of us coping maybe with winter coming, for all you Game of Thrones fans out there? Winter is coming. And just to kind of, rather than passively let it happen or even try and fight it, to be trying to go to the same places and actively watch it happening and almost document it happening in our own minds.
Yes, definitely. It's a really good point, Kate. Yeah, if you can establish that place in nature, it becomes an anchor of your experiences. It becomes a place that you can go back to and reflect on how your life is. Say if you went there every week or every fortnight, it's a check-in place for you. How am I doing? But more than that, you're also beginning to attune yourself to that rhythm of nature. So as we move closer and closer to the winter solstice, the darkest point of the year, we must allow ourselves to move into that place within us. And I used to struggle with winter all the time. And then I realized something. I realized that every winter, a part of me dies. And I thought, that's how it's meant to be.
Mm.
A part of me is meant to die so that I can be reborn again in the spring.
Mm.
And once I'd realised that and let go, then I felt really happy with that whole winter thing going on and everything dying and going back into the ground. It's part of the natural rhythm that we've kind of lost touch with.
Yeah, and I think we really fight against our energy levels dropping as well. And that, you know, as the sun's going down at 4 o'clock and we're supposed to be going out that night, although obviously a lot less of that happening now, I'm always like, oh God, why haven't I got the energy? Oh God, am I getting old? Oh, is it finally happening and all this? And then when the spring arrives, you realise, oh no, that was just the winter. And it's like, how about we just, if we were actually in tune with nature and we were back just fully embracing our animal self, we would be bunking down, wouldn't we? We'd be battening down the hatches.
That's right.
And we would be resting.
Hibernating.
Yeah, that's what we should be doing. But having said that, in order to spend more time in nature, in order to cope with what could potentially be another lockdown, I think we need to get more Scandi about it, don't we? We actually need to embrace being outside more, and especially seeing a lot of our activities like theatre, bars, restaurants, etc. A lot of that and all our socialising with friends is moving outside. We need to embrace being outdoors, don't we? And I think being in nature is probably a good way of doing that.
Totally, I totally agree. Yes, as long as you've got some really good warm clothes on, then you can just go out. And if you've established that place in nature that's your little special place, it feels like a kind of home, actually. It feels like there's a familiarity when you go back there. And you can just... you can just cuddle up into a ball.
No, this sounds
amazing.
This sounds really, really good.
It really
it sounds like something
this
we really need
so
to embrace right now. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Tomorrow, Gwen, both of us. You see some sort of local news reports of strange lady found huddled in ball in Leibowitz.
Yeah.
You'll know it was me.
With her mobile phone turned off and without any friends.
Yeah. For me, What always makes me smile is when people have that beginner's mind of exploring nature, that innocence that they bring with them to that inquisitiveness of exploring what's out there in nature. You don't need to read loads of books about it and have loads of knowledge. The mind always wants to get in the way of things, and it's about having that direct, visceral kind of physical somatic experience of the natural world that's important, and listening into the voice of the body, the kind of body mind, the body wisdom, which is always there within us, but it's kind of suppressed. And it's like the more time we can spend out in nature, the more we can tune in and listen to what our body is telling us. There's a lovely line from a Mary Oliver poem, one of my favorites, called Wild Geese, where she says, you don't need to crawl across the desert for 100 miles repenting. You just need to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Lovely Stefan, wasn't he a lovely bloke?
Really, really lovely bloke. Really enjoyed talking to him.
Mm.
And one thing that we didn't mention was that Stefan runs an organisation called Nature and Therapy UK, and he runs Shirin-Yoku courses out of his centre in Dartmouth, as well as nature therapy courses. And when did he say they start again? April?
Oh yeah, April 2021. So spring next year, his courses are starting again.
And we'll put the link in the description to this episode so you can go and check it out for yourself.
I actually did feel, I know, well, at one point we did get quite teary talking to him, didn't we? Just that thought of, oh, how we've evolved with trees, and then somehow we've just shunned them and we chopped them down, and now we live in concrete boxes. And it's like, what have we done? What have we done?
Yeah, that really resonated with me, actually, that the fact that we now look in to nature from the outside, as opposed to just being in it and immersed with it.
Yeah. So talking about being immersed in it, Kate.
Hey, Gwen, have you immersed yourself in nature recently?
Hey, funny you should say that. I went for a nature bath.
Tell us all.
Oh no, what's it called? A forest bath. So yeah, so I'm in West Wales, and I'm very lucky that just down the road is Tŷ Canol. It's called a national park, which I had no idea. Call it Tŷ Canol Woods around here. I do you know, it's like a 10-15 minute drive from my house, and do I ever go? Do I heck? And so I went, and it's got like a real prehistoric forest in there. There's even like an old settlement. There's like old stone walls that have just been taken back over by moss. Like, it's so utterly beautiful in there. Now there's clearly defined paths that you're supposed to be on. And I did not do this deliberately, but seeing as Stefan did tell us to get lost, right?
Yeah, you're nothing if not obedient.
I know. I did get completely and utterly lost.
Well done,
and
you.
Yeah, it was amazing. So I did exactly what he told me, because usually I will always have my phone with me. I probably would have been listening to a podcast. I will always have either somebody with me or a dog at least.
Yeah.
And so I was like, right, okay, I'm going to go completely by myself into the woods. It was amazing. Like, immediately I was really aware of the scent of the smells he was talking about. Like, they were really strong. And I was really paying attention, just really looking through the trees, the trees beyond the trees, and listening to the babbling brooks. And then I was touching trees as I was going past.
Yeah.
And just really engaging with it more than I would do usually. And I'm always walking on moorland, as I was saying, or I'm always walking on a beach. I absolutely never go into the woods, or very rarely. Yeah, so once I'd got lost, because I'd ended up in a field and then climbing over a fence, and I ended up probably in a bit that you're not actually supposed to go in. So there was, I don't think human feet have been in there for quite some time.
My God, you're breaking new territory.
But it was all like mossy, like really amazing bright greens. Like, bits of it reminded me of Never Ending Story. And there was just, it was just like, so at one point I did do what he told me to, and I did lie down.
Yeah.
And I just looked up at the canopy. It was amazing. And do you know what it really made me think of? I was thinking of my childhood so much as I was clambering.
Well, did you spend a lot of time in the woods when you were a child?
I think, growing up in Wales, we were always in the fields and always in the woods, and always, like, we'd literally go and sit in streams. We'd take a bucket to a stream and sit on an upturned bucket. Like, we were always, like, fingers in the dirt.
Yes.
And we were always messing around with leaves and moss and bark and trees. And I just don't do that at all. Did you? What about you? Did you go and lie down?
I did. So I had a similar experience to you in that I decided the woods I went to, they're on the edge of a urban built up area, and they've got quite a lot of really wide paths through them. You know, people push their buggies on. So I was like, right, I'm going to delve off the main track, because walking down those tracks, I couldn't really smell anything. I didn't really get a feeling of being in the woods. So I just went freestyle off into the wild undergrowth. And like you, got a little bit lost, which anybody listening to this who knows Lee Woods will laugh, because that's kind of hard to do. I just got so disorientated. I couldn't work out.
They are very disorientating.
Yeah. But then when going right into the woods, then the smells, I really got that scent from the trees, and I lay down and stared up in the leaves, which felt really comforting. And I was thinking about what Stefan had said about that kind of being comforted and being a really safe space just in the trees. It was beautiful. So my relationship with the woods has really changed over the past 6 months, because I lived in the Alps for a while. And when I was a child, we never went to the woods. We went to the Lake District and the Peak District, and we're always up high, big, wide open vistas and views. And that's always been what I've gravitated towards. But because the woods were our nearest outdoor place during lockdown, I started going there every day and began to really see the beauty in them. And going for this walk today was just so, so peaceful. I was really aware of how much life was around me. The birds, the squirrels, all the things growing. Technical nature terminology there. You know, things growing.
Stuff was growing.
Stuff grew in the woods, and it was lovely. But when I got lost, after this sort of an initial, euphoria wore off, I got a little bit freaked out. Because I don't know about you, but previously when I've been in the woods, if I see someone, if I see someone just emerging out of the bushes, I either think, well, they've just gone for a cheeky wee, or I think, oh my God, it's a murderer who's just appeared.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
No, first thought murderer, second thought wee.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Why did I put wee?
But yeah, I was having the exact same feeling when I was lost. And I was kind of, because Stefan had told us to get lost, right? And he told us to just be dreamlike. And I kept having to remind myself, dreamlike, I'm dreamlike. Where's the fucking path?
Don't kill me, but, Mr. Murderer.
Yes. Is there a murderer here? How about now? But I was really, I also did have a moment where I was like, do you know what? I'm really safe here. And I felt kind of held.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, this is where I belong. And so nature,
interesting.
Despite everything we do to it, nature or these trees will look after me. I was that's where you get when you've been lost for a while. You kind of start thinking big, don't you? But I did feel, I did feel looked after. I have to say, once I'd found the path, and then I'd found a sign which told me where I was, and then I walked, I headed off in the direction that I thought would take me back to my car, and then I was walking for what I think was like 35 minutes, and then arrived back at the same sign. And I was like, oh my God, this is when the woods turn into like Blair Witch Project. I was like, I'm going to be killed. But anyway, other than all of that, it was so lovely. And do you know what he was saying about being like an animal? And he tells people when he takes them out to like experience the woods like an animal. So get down and dirty, get under the under the hedge, look out from it as if you're an animal. And that was exactly what the guy was saying in My Octopus Teacher, that he, when he was underwater, he was acting like an octopus. He's like, I'm going to be like an octopus. And it's like when you're in nature, you have to get in with it, don't you?
Yeah.
And I did that at one point. I could have gone round a tree trunk. I was like, no, I'm gonna go over this tree trunk, which meant I had to go under another thing. There's nothing agile about it.
I've just got these visions of you emerging from the bushes with twigs in your hair, birds nesting on your shoulder, full feral.
But I tell you what, I totally got it. I really got what he was talking about. And I really did feel a kind of sadness that we are so distanced from the woods. And what he was saying about, you know, that the lifetime of that humans spent evolving with woodland was if the length of a football pitch. And the urbanisation of our lives is just the last 10 millimetres of it. I felt that so acutely. I felt this kind of like some kind of distant kinship that with the trees. I just kind of or something that we, you know, I felt that we have separated ourselves, and it made me think, God, I need to come here more often.
Yeah, I had really similar thoughts, actually, that I felt like I wanted to be part of it. I didn't want to be this visitor from somewhere else. You know, I didn't want to feel like I was other. I wanted to feel like I was part of it.
Yeah, those natural essential oils that have evolved to be good for animals and good for us. I really thought, I want lungfuls of this stuff.
Yeah.
We need this. And so will you do more forest bathing, Kate?
I definitely will. I definitely will. Mm. I'll make a real conscious effort to, you know, go off and have that time and to do it on my own. I think that's a big difference.
It's definitely something I want to do more often. And like he said, if it's something that you do regularly, once a week or once every couple of weeks, you can really get to know a place and get to see how it changes and become part of it. You know, as I was lying there looking up at the canopy, I was really thinking to myself, I want to be here more often, and I want to come and sleep in the trees, you know, in the woods. I was lying there imagining buying a swag and coming and spending the night in the forest and just being really part of it. Like I was really in there. I was also thinking that David Attenborough would really approve of this. This is what he wants us to get, isn't it? This is what he wants us to understand, the importance of nature and the natural world and how integral we are to it and how much we're destroying it. I think more of us should go and lie in forests. you for listening to episode 3 of Write Up My Podcast.
As always, if you've got any feedback or anything you just want to discuss with us, don't hesitate to get in touch at writeupmypodcast@gmail.com.
Massive, massive thank you, not only to you for listening to us, but also to our lovely, lovely team. That's Andy T, our editor, Andrew Grimes on the music, and Kat, our content editor.
So that's all for this week. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with our next episode. And in the meantime, don't forget to try new things
to make you feel good. Bye-bye.
Tell me, did you like the podcast, Brian?
No!
Oh. If, unlike Brian, you thought our podcast was really great, then don't hold back, like, subscribe and tell your mate. But if, like Brian, you thought our podcast wasn't fun, then just keep quiet, don't feel the need to tell anyone. We'd love to hear from you if you've got some thoughts to share, such rich and lovely views that all should be aware of. But I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate. 'Cause we don't need grumpy pants bringing everybody down. No, we don't need negative Nellies making people frown. So I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate.